Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Advisors on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, designed to bring you quality information, resources, and advice to keep your business moving in the right direction. Now here's your host, Pamela Muldoon.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Next Stage Business Radio Network and our show, The Advisors. And we are kicking off 2011 with another great season ahead of some excellent business programming for you, the small business owner. And if you're looking to start a business or maybe working inside of a business where some of this information is going to be helpful for you as well. And we are just going to dive into some great stuff as we kick off the new year. We're actually going to be talking with two advisors today from our legal team, and we're going to break down some of the tax changes and some of the things that didn't change as 2010 came to a close and we kicked off 2011. We're going to get into that with our folks at Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen in just a bit. And before we do, I just want to make sure that you, the listener, know how to connect with us even when we are not considered live on the air. Of course, we have our website for all of our programming information, and we will be adding some additional programming here in early 2011, so stay tuned for that. That, of course, nextstagebusinessradio.com. You can find us on Facebook. We have our fan page as well as Twitter. Twitter handle is at NSB Radio Network as well. Check us out on LinkedIn. We've started a LinkedIn group and growing every day. We post out the information about the show and other discussions are happening there every week as well. And our iTunes channel. Don't worry if you can't catch us live, because there's always a couple of ways that you can connect with us. Obviously, on the iTunes channel, just simply subscribe and it downloads automatically into your system. And, of course, you can follow us here on the Blog Talk Radio platform. Just simply go to our station here on Blog Talk Radio, follow us, and you're going to get email notices and connected to all the different programs that we do. So there you have it, how to stay connected with us and listen to us even when you're not able to listen to us live and in person. So before we get too deep into the discussion, I want to make sure that you, again, get to meet our legal advisor team. We are very fortunate here to be working with a legal team with Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen, located out of the Twin Cities. Of course, our legal advisor, Jeff O'Brien. He is the business and real estate attorney over there at Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. Hi, Jeff. Good morning, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you, and Happy New Year. Welcome to 2011.
Happy New Year to you, too.
And you have with you someone who's going to break down some great information for us today. He is Earl Cohen, part of the Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen name. And he one of his areas, along with the business and real estate, Jeff, that you do, is estate and tax attorney as well. So, Earl Cohen, welcome to the show as we break down the year-end tax package. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you, and likewise.
Excellent. Well, before we get going, I know Jeff has shared some background, and we'll reconnect with you, Jeff, and kind of bring you into the how you connect with what Earl does. But, Earl, if you'd be willing, let's start off our conversation today. We're going to break down that year-end tax package, what Congress waited last minute to actually make some decisions on. We're going to break that down today. But if you would, will you just give our audience just a 1 or 2 minute synopsis here on who is Earl and some of the areas that you specialize in the attorney world?
Sure. I manage our business practice group, and in addition to being managing shareholder for the firm. But for the last nearly 40 years, I guess it's really coming up on us, I have been working in the estate and tax area. Much of my work involves wealth transfer planning, income tax issues, asset protection planning, all surrounded by other business work, including issues regarding LLCs and the like. And it's all with the idea of serving the business owner's needs and a business's needs.
Well, and with your diverse background, and of course, with in light of our current situation, all of that has really come into play. Your expertise is being pulled right now as we kick off 2011. So let's kind of start at a foundation, if we could, Earl. what is this tax package? Why do I have to, why am I, as a business owner or even as an individual who works inside a business, I mean, at the end of the day, we're paying taxes all around, so we'll definitely touch on all those areas. But just give us some background of this tax package that was finally agreed upon at the end of 2010. Why do I need to care, and what did that all entail, or at least just break that down, if you would?
Sure. A little bit of background. In 2001, what are referred to as the Bush-era tax cuts were put in place. And what they did, what the Congress did, was identify a series of surpluses that had occurred from the prior years that Congress decided needed to be returned to the public. So they put in place a number of tax cuts that were to take place over a period of time, approximately 9 or 10 years. All of these tax cuts were to sunset or go away on December 31st, 2009, in some cases, December 31st, 2010. And there were a series of cuts, but there were a series of issues, of tax issues, that actually did go away. What's real important here is that without the tax legislation that was passed at the last minute, without an extension of these Bush-era tax cuts, everything that we've gotten used to, that the taxpayer has gotten used to, and we'll go through rates in just a couple of moments, would have gone away, and we'd be dealing with a relatively new scenario and tax regime. We'd have income taxes going up by as much as 15% to 20%. We'd have capital gains increases of 33 1/3%. We'd have estate taxes that would be going through the roof that would very seriously and adversely affect small business in the event of a death of the owner. And so these tax cuts have become very important, but it's important that we understand, and we're going to talk a little bit today, in fact, quite a bit today, about what's in it for the small business owner and as well as individuals. And so we really need to be concerned about how this new tax act, which is in large part an extension of the Bush-era tax rates, how these new rates and provisions, including not just tax cuts but a number of other things, how they help small business and individuals.
Well, and it's interesting, Earl, because, you know, we watch TV and kind of engage with different media, and we hear these words, you know, tax package, tax cuts, Bush era tax cuts, all those different things. But it's, you know, what I like about what we're doing today, and I appreciate you taking time to do this, is breaking this down so that we can actually connect with why it affects us as small business owners, and you know, why it took pretty much to the end of 2010 for this to, you know, for a decision had to be made, basically, if from my basic understanding. I mean, at the end of the year, a decision had to be made, and Congress decided to go ahead and continue to implement some of the elements of the current situation. But then there were also some things we're going to discuss today that were changed that maybe we're not aware of. Is that correct?
Yes. And let me jump in with something for our listeners to remember. This is now a 2-year extension of rates that were in effect as of, in most cases, 12/31/2010. This is just a 2-year extension. We're back at it again, discussing where the tax rates go in 2012. Right about the time of the next presidential election. The other thing to note is that we have to remember that what this year has shown us, this last 12 months, is that tax and tax policy is really a function of politics. And if you look to see, you know, really where the decisions and how the decisions were made, it was all a function, in large part, of where the politicians stood on very political issues. And with that, we can jump right into, as soon as you're ready, we can jump right into what all of this means and what we should be doing about it.
Perfect. And I'm glad that you teed up that, you know, we may be having this interview again in 2 years, Earl. So you may be going through this all over again, but I think it's extremely important that you kind of you know, you've been kind enough to tee up that this is kind of an end in mind conversation. We're going to talk about the changes and break them down, but business owners out there, pay attention. Pay attention to who's in office, local, you know, state and national, because all of those elements are going to affect again in 2 years. Any changes or if there are modifications. That's a really good point. So let's do that, Earl. Let's get some highlights of what's going on in this tax act that came about at the end of the year. Why don't we start with, you'd mentioned some of the elements that could have happened if Congress had not made the decision they did to continue with some of the tax cuts. So you mentioned the income tax, that there could have been a pretty significant increase. Why don't you break down where we're at with that currently?
Sure.
With the contract that was implemented or continued.
Well, with this with this recent tax act, I should say, without this recent tax act, what would have happened on January 1st is that the top rates for individuals would have gone from 35% to 39%, and at the very low end, there would have been a smaller increase for those in the lower income brackets. When it comes to capital gains, we've gotten used to capital gains rates at 15% for quite a number of years now, and that capital gains rate would have gone, without this act, would have gone from 15 to 20%. That's a 33% increase. On the estate side, we would have gone from a $3.5 million exemption. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. That exemption for federal estate tax purposes would have dropped to $1 million, and the estate tax rate would have gone to 55%. Now, we have to remember that these are all individual rates, but most businesses today are organized in companies, whether it's LLCs or partnerships or sub-S corporations. They're organized as a pass-through entity. So these are rates that affect the actual business owner as opposed to the business. And so an increase in those kinds of rates would have made a huge difference for many of our clients as well as much of the public. Focusing on the estate for just a moment, there is this idea that the estate tax, federal estate tax, was actually repealed for 2010. What this act did is repeal the repeal, and in fact provided some options for deaths that occurred for families where deaths occurred in 2010. We'll get into that in just a couple of moments.
Okay.
So, overall, we're dealing with fairly substantial rate increases that would have occurred had this legislation not been passed.
Okay. And since the legislation was passed, for these particular areas that you've mentioned, the income tax, the estate tax, capital gains tax, there have been no increases. It stays the same for the next 2 years. Is that correct? Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, that is correct. With some modifications, there are some, you know, technical areas where there are some things that that actually will cause some small increases. But along with the rates staying the same as they were before, so that we don't have any income tax rate increases in any of the rate areas. Currently, we have rates that run from 10%, 25%, 28%, 33%, and 35%, and all of these rates are extended through 2012. The big thing that many middle Americans have been concerned about is Congress enacting a permanent AMT, alternate minimum tax patch. This patch is necessary and has been passed at the very last minute by Congress over the last couple of years. Once again, this act put a patch back in place so that most of middle America does not end up with alternative minimum tax, which is a tax, an alternate tax based upon some minimum computations that can affect your tax bill if you have capital gains and a number of other AMT items in your tax bill. But in addition to that, we got back an itemized deduction for state and local sales taxes. That's really important, especially for us in Minnesota, because, of course, we have a relatively high set of taxes. there. The other thing that was reinstated for mostly for people, it really only affects only people over 70 years of age, but it affects most of the charities in the state, and that is allowing a deduction, rather a tax-free contribution directly from an IRA up to $100,000 for people that are willing to make a contribution of their IRAs without having to declare the income and then separately take the charitable deduction. That isn't a real well-known feature, but it's been very important for the charities, nonprofits throughout Minnesota and throughout the region. Sure.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, the state of Minnesota, and so I just want to clarify for our listeners, because we are on the Internet, and the wonderful World Wide Web does get us all over the country and possibly even all over the world, and we will address some of these issues in terms of a state piece to it, but I just want to put a little caveat to this, that if you are in another state of the union, that please make sure that you're talking with an advisor that can guide you with your state tax situation. But now, Earl, in this particular with the package, we're really talking at a federal level. Am I accurate in that as well? This has really been a federal piece that was agreed upon at the end of 2010 and as we kick off 2011.
That's correct. Federal government does not dictate any tax policy or rates for individual states, and everything we're talking about is what is known as the Internal Revenue Code.
Perfect. I just wanted to clarify that because, you know, as we talk about these things, you can't help but interweave conversation about a state complement and how it affects your state taxes, as, you know, the federal and state together. So I appreciate that, and I want to make sure we can continue to do that. I want to make sure our listeners were aware that if you're in Tennessee, there might be some different elements to that. So in terms of the highlights of the actual act, is there anything that we've missed that you want to make sure we've covered in what's been affected? Because I want to start breaking down kind of that real-world scenario, Earl, right, where it's, you know, you guys as attorneys, I know, Jeff, I've talked to you about this a few times when we did some conversations last year. It's an interesting time to kind of, you know, basically work with business owners and work with clients because you weren't sure where things were going to fall at the end of 2010.
Yeah, this area, Pamela, is, you know, Earl and I joke about how 10 years ago when they first enacted this set of tax cuts, that there would, you know, and there was a joke about how 2010 would be the right year to die because there was no estate tax, right? And we joked about this because nobody thought they would actually let legislation go for 10 years and not do anything to it. We all, as soon as 2002, 2003, there was discussion about the estate tax is going to come back, what's the exclusion amount, what's going to be the rate, and it dragged out, you know, like Earl said, tax policy is probably the most charged political issue in our society right now, and that, and as polarized as the two-party system is, it gets created in that context, and so you had a situation where they were coming down to the wire with a, you know, at this point it was one party leaving power in one of the houses of Congress and quickly pulling something together. And, you know, a lot of our tax planning in this country, you know, is a series of, you know, compromises and patches and fixes. Earl was talking about the AMT patch. And, you know, realistically, the last real wholesale reform of the tax code was 25 years ago now, 1986. And before that, it was another 30-some years before that, 1954. And there's been some talk already that one of the things that might happen with a president of one party and a Congress of another party, just like it was back in 1986, only it was the opposite parties, that it might be the time to discuss about, you know, a full reform of the tax code to basically clean up all these fixes and patches that have occurred in the last 25 years. Am I right about that, Earl?
Yeah, indeed. And that's included conversation about a national sales tax or VAT. Mm-hmm. It's included compressing the rates, maybe even getting closer to a flat tax. And all of those things have so many political ramifications beyond just the financial ramifications for the country.
And that makes our job hard as practitioners, trying to anticipate where they're going with these things and how we advise our clients as to their business issues, as to their real estate issues, as to their estate planning issues. On a yearly basis, there's always, you know, updates as to what's going on, and we as attorneys have to be apprised of that and are always giving our clients the up-to-the-minute advice, that, and we have to stay on top of these things.
Well, and that's, it's interesting that you brought that up. It's how challenging it is, because we chatted on this a little bit, and, of course, we brought Pam Ricker, our CPA advisor, into this conversation as well, along with Todd Terhorst, the financial planner advisor. How challenging your job is to advise in somewhat of a proactive measure for your business owners and your clients. And you're doing a little educated guesswork, but if there is, like you're saying, Jeff, a total, you know, conversation about totally revamping the code, that would be even more challenging, I would think, to be proactive in terms of what could be expected. So what I'd like to do is break down, you know, some of the there's so many things that have stayed the same that you've mentioned and broken down wonderfully for us, Earl, but what are some of the opportunities that we have as individuals? I mean, this is one thing about tax. It touches all parts of our lives, doesn't it, really? So let's break down from being an individual, whether I'm an employee and I'm being taxed through my payroll, business owner, and then, of course, you mentioned the estate planning piece and some of the elements there. Let's talk a little bit about that, if you would, as we kick off 2011. What are some opportunities there for us?
Well, let's start with people who are employed. And even business owners in a corporation are still employees, and this will affect them. There's been a payroll tax holiday, in part, that's been declared by part of this act. For wage earners, and that's anyone on a W-2 salary, the Social Security part of their wages and their withholding is actually going to come down a full 2% from 6.2% to 4.2%. Now, what does that really mean? For anyone earning over the wage base, at or over the wage base of $106,000, roughly $106,000, they're going to see about $2,200 of relief during the year. And what's expected in terms of an opportunity, let's talk macro. From a macro standpoint, what's expected is that this money going into everyone's paycheck is going to be spent in the economy. And by spending that in the economy, the expectation is that this is going to help us get us back on the track of growth once again. And with that growth will come reemployment of those people that were laid off as sales for retailers, manufacturers, service industry people. All of those jobs, hopefully, or many of those jobs, would come back a little bit quicker. So, you know, while it sounds like a very small amount, what the statistics show is that people in the lower income brackets, frankly, spend more of their take-home check than those in the very upper income bracket. So I think that seems to be, for the economy, probably opportunity number one.
Okay.
If individuals, people will need to continue looking at the potential conversion of their traditional IRAs into Roths. The income limitations for conversion of a traditional IRA has gone away, and so no matter what you're earning, you're still in a position where you can convert that to a Roth IRA with very, very significant tax savings down the road. Now, what it means is that there will be taxes on the conversion. In converting the traditional IRA, taxes will be due in the year of the conversion. We lost the opportunity as of January 1st of this year to spread that tax over a two-year period. That was the provision for 2010 only, where we could spread the tax on the conversion over 2011 and 2012. So we've lost that ability, but conversions can still be very helpful for many people. The income within the IRA is never taxed, and the distributions from a Roth IRA are never taxed, unless Congress goes ahead and makes a change down the road. Where there are some, and I know Jeff has some comment on this as well, but there have been significant business tax relief provisions that have been passed as part of this act. I'm going to cover a few, and Jeff, I think you'll want to jump in and talk about a few as well, since it's really important to bring jobs back, and because two-thirds of all the jobs in the country are a result of small business. It's important that some tax benefits be provided to small business. And for those dealing with restaurants or retail improvements, the period of depreciation has been lowered down to 15 years for qualified leasehold improvements for business equipment purchases. These don't sound like they're real significant, but for a small business that's operating retail, that has an opportunity for expansion that would include a number of additional employees, this can be extremely important. Jeff, you want to talk a little bit about bonus depreciation?
Yeah, there's, you know, we talk about capital assets, and this is a big deal to a lot of our real estate owners out there, particularly of commercial property that, you know, with rental properties and stuff, and, you know, capital equipment in a property, you know, it breaks, has to be replaced, and all these different things. And there's and over time, capital assets get depreciated. And maybe Earl, you can jump in and explain a little bit better what depreciation means. But there was a provision in the I think one of the stimulus bills in 2008 that allowed for bonus depreciation of 50%, and into this new tax package, it's actually a full 100% bonus depreciation. So that's actually a big consequence to particularly real estate owners that their real estate holdings are their business.
Sure, absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, and when you guys you're breaking down some of this, I think it's what's interesting is the residual effect of how all these moving parts are connected inside of a business. And so we may not think at first blush that this affects us, some of these. We know it affects us, but, I mean, we just don't pay as close attention. But you're both talking about examples where the purchase of equipment or the ability to move forward with projects or expansion totally affects not only the economic market in which we live in, but the jobs that that could be available to our local economy and to our state economies. And, of course, that all registers on a national level. So I really like that we're talking about some of this residual effect and how because, you know, it was a heated battle as we wound out 2010 in terms of the political climate and support of the business community. So it's sounding like, Earl, what you're saying as well is there are some very positive pieces with this expansion of the tax package for small business owners to continue to expand and grow, and we have the next 2 years to really take advantage of that. Is that part of what I'm hearing from you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like about the package beyond the rates is Congress bringing back the research and experimentation credit. This credit for research and development expired at the end of 2009, and now it's been brought back for 2010 and 2011. Now, whether it goes beyond that is really kind of important. But even in very, very small businesses, we have several clients who are in the business of science, and we're talking hard as opposed to social science here, in which they are developing either medical devices, medical cures, several clients in the pharmaceutical business. And if without that credit, it would have dramatically reduced the amount of actual capital in hand that they would have available. This has also spurred interest by venture capitalists and other investors in looking at opportunities to use that credit in companies where there is, let's call it, missionary development work. And there isn't a lot of press about that, but for many of these small businesses, this will actually help improve employment as well.
Excellent. No, that's, you know, it's there's so many pieces. I mean, if anyone's ever looked at the tax code book, I know Pam Ricker, our CPA, we've talked about this quite a bit. There's a lot of stuff in there, and we don't understand all those moving parts. And so if we can pull out elements, even if they don't seem like they're the big surface elements like you're referring to, Earl, and being able to pull that out and how that can positively impact or negatively impact, I think that's part of the opportunity we have with a show like this, is to be able to break some of those pieces down. So are there other elements for the business community that the tax code or the tax package has either continued to help strengthen, or are there any other red flags that we should be aware of for the business piece?
Let me throw out the dividend rate issue. Before the tax, the Bush tax era breaks back in 2001, dividends were taxed. These are distributions from regular corporations. They have profit, and they go ahead and share it with their shareholders. This does not include S corporations, where S distributions are made. Those are not the what we would refer to as qualified dividends. But in a regular corporation, no matter how large or small, those dividends had historically been taxed at ordinary income rates as high in recent years, going back just 10 or 11 years, as high as 39%. Well, the Bush-era tax rates and the cuts that took place in 2001 actually reduced that dividend tax rate to 15%. Those have been continued. As many people probably have heard, corporations out there, especially public corporations, have been sitting on enormous amounts of cash. And the question has been what to do with that cash. And with the dividend rates continuing at 15%, there's going to be a greater, let's say, interest in making sure that there's a good balance between distributions to the shareholders and reinvestment of some of the profits that the corporations have been holding. And as it turns out, what we forget is there still are laws on the books within the tax code that regulate the amount of capital that many corporations are able to retain. Even though it allows some companies to maintain sufficient capital well into the billions for the operation of their company, but the code does encourage distribution of some of that excess cash. And this will give us an opportunity over the next 2 years to really see some of that go out to the public. And again, once cash is put in the hands of most of the public, it's likely to be spent. This is the trickle-down effect, or I would say trickle-up effect, that I like. When businesses find that they have more demand for their product or services, they get busier, and they have then the incentive to hire people to better service, better produce to meet this higher demand. And this trickle-up effect, putting money in the hands of those that are going to spend it for everyday needs as well as luxuries, will continue to have a good hard effect on our economy. And we have to remember that only by putting income-related cash, that is, it may be interest, dividends, or ordinary income that's earned, only by putting that kind of cash in the hands of taxpayers and, in the case of businesses, earnings, in the case of businesses, do those businesses or individuals pay tax? And the reason, sometimes this is kind of lost on the public, the reason many that the federal government and many states have been sitting with deficits is that there has been a significant reduction in that tax revenue. And that tax revenue has been reduced because many people have lost their jobs, businesses, the income of businesses happens to be way down. All of these items that Congress has addressed, I think there should be more, but all of these items have worked in favor of putting money in the hands of individuals who will spend and help improve the economy. things.
Well, and you really you bring up that residual effect again of, you know, one of the words that kind of came to my mind as you were talking, Earl, was the stopgap. You know, really that's been in place for probably the past, 12, 18 months, maybe even 24 months, that you mentioned the businesses that have been holding on to that money. And somewhere along the line, it's got to shift and it's got to move. But the residual effect of now knowing what's going to happen, because we understand that we have two more years for most of the package or what's been in place, I think we're all starting to see a shift in how money is being moved in our local economies already into this new year. I mean, what was it? We just came out of one of, here in Minnesota, one of the, I think, the best spending in retail for a holiday season since 2007 or 2006 or something like that. So I think we're starting to see a reaction already just on a very micro level here in the Twin Cities of some of the things you're referring to.
Actually, if Congress could put a new holiday equivalent to Christmas right in the middle of the year, we might see that happen twice a year instead of just once a year. How's that?
We need to give more gifts for 4th of July. Is that what you're saying? We need more spending around the 4th, people. Come on.
I know a lot of children that would love that new holiday.
Yes, I'm sure that there are a lot, and especially with the technology that's constantly coming out, there's always a new gadget or two that we need to pick up, isn't there? Come on, right?
Absolutely. Ask any technology company.
Yes, absolutely. No, this is great. I'm glad that we're breaking this down, and it sounds like at the end of the day, or in this way, at the end of the year, into the new year, this tax package, even though it's just a, I don't want to say it's a Band-Aid or, you know, just kind of, but the 2 years, I think that is something we definitely want to make sure that we touch on as well. But before we do, you mentioned the estate planning piece. Is there anything else in terms of the estate as we're planning as business owners, as individuals, or receiving the money or the assets through estate? Is there anything in there that there's an opportunity or a shift that's taking place that's allowing us to move forward?
Let's address what's happened for individuals at the federal level with capital gains rates. We were very concerned that we would lose this 15% capital gains rate at the federal level, and now it's been extended for another 2 years. This gives individuals, for purposes of planning their own estates, some opportunities to reposition their assets without a significant increase in tax cost. And by that I mean there are people that were either rushing transactions before the end of 2010 in order to take advantage of the capital gains rate, fearing that it was going to go away. The economy, the supply of deals was fairly significant, although for many people they were not ready to get rid of real estate that they were holding or even businesses that they were holding, because prices still, as a result of demand and availability of financing, was really quite restrained. So there was a lot of concern and among many of our clients as well. I can't get my price in 2010. I don't want to lose the ability to take advantage of these lower capital gains rates. What do we do? It made planning tough. But now that these rates have been extended for another 2 years and the economy seems to be coming back, planning for business succession, for people that are nearing or at retirement and are looking at doing something with their business, I think is going to provide what we believe is a huge opportunity. Now, it doesn't mean that someone who's 45 years old, who hadn't been thinking about retirement, is suddenly going to come to the block and say, okay, I think I'd better sell my business now. But it does mean that for people that are looking at potentially making a change, tax rates will not be as much an impediment as they may have been in the past. But that's really going to get us to the overall issue when it comes to estate planning, especially for the business owner. Planning is going to be a big issue. And succession planning for businesses has always been a big issue for us and for our clients. Now we believe it has become an even bigger issue. We have a two-year window, and we believe at this point that our clients have to treat this as a two-year window and not an indefinite period of time in which to get that planning accomplished. Jeff, do you want to comment a little bit on some succession planning? We can get some discussion going on it.
Sure. I mean, with the succession planning, like Earl mentioned, we have a 2 year window. There's lots of we've talked before on the air with Mr. Terhorst family about some of the different ways that you can create a succession plan for your business, and one of the succession plans is to sell the business to a third party or to the employees or whoever, right? And you know, with the sale of capital assets, the sale of stock is afforded capital gains treatment under the federal tax laws, which is the more favorable type of tax treatment as opposed to ordinary income. And we saw this in the last year. There were a number of clients that came to us looking to sell their business because of the uncertainty about what was going to happen at the end of the year with those capital gains rates that Earl touched on. And the same thing is true now. So if you're a business owner and, you know, you're looking to maybe stand down in the next couple of years, now is the time to talk to your tax advisor, talk to your attorney about, you know, looking at, you know, about selling that business and to take advantage of the rates as they are, rather than worrying about paying a higher rate, you know, in 2 years, you know, 2-3 years from now.
So it sounds like, as you guys are talking, and I'm, you know, processing this a little bit here, is it can be to our advantage that we know we have a 2 year window. I mean, if we look at this from a cup half full perspective, right? Let's get in front of our advisors, our legal advisor, financial planner advisor, our CPA advisor. Let's, if there was a decision we've been holding off, what is it, you know, now you've got this window of 24 months to really put a solid plan in place with the current situation. But another thing that as you've talked about, you mentioned, Jeff, some people were holding off, right? Holding off, they were selling their businesses or moving on to that succession planning. Again, a residual effect of not knowing and how that affects our local, state, and national economy as well.
Exactly.
It's amazing, really. Yeah.
Look at it this way, from a real basic level. You know, people go out and they buy things when there's sales, right? And why do they do that? Because the sale price is lower than the regular price. Same thing here. There are things that we can do in the next 2 years because the price, the taxes, is lower than what it may be in year three. And that's why this is a good time if you're contemplating some of those transactions that could take advantage of some of these beneficial rates that Earl was talking about. This is why you come to us now, not 3 months before the law changes when you find out that maybe it's not going to change.
Right.
We talk about this now and talk about a plan because, you know, we as attorneys, you know, there's a reason it's called business planning, succession planning, and estate planning. It involves a plan. Ready, fire, aim is not a plan. You know,
right.
We want to take some time and discuss what are all the best options given the situation, and that sometimes takes maybe several months or several years in advance to do the right plan. And so that's why Earl and I want our clients to be coming and talking to us now about these things as opposed to, you know, a month before these rates expire. At that point, they may have lost a lot of opportunities to save some money.
Well, and Earl, you'd mentioned, you know, in 2 years we're going to have another election, and more than likely, and kind of to tag on to what you mentioned earlier, Jeff, too, is how many years, you know, it's been since there's been a major change or rehaul, right? So if it... I mean, we can't obviously say we know what's going to happen, but in 2 years, from an educated guess perspective, probably some changes are going to come down the pipeline, you think?
I don't think in a presidential election year there are going to be massive changes that really come down the pipeline. I think what we've learned in the past from a political standpoint, it's not going to be real helpful for any presidential candidate or any congressional candidate to talk about a regime of that includes higher taxes. But I do think that there's going to be a move, as Jeff pointed out before, towards a change in the way in which taxes are collected, and probably a new set of taxes that, you know, that are defined as sales or value added, VATs, that are going to be necessary. We have to remember that on the one hand, the entire public, including the business community, insists on a set of services on a national basis, and that includes at the very top the most expensive service, and that is defense of the country. And it runs all the way down to the potholes, you know, that each of us, you know, have to navigate every day. And the problem is somebody's got to pay for it. And there is a big uproar over deficit spending, that is, spending for things without the money to pay for it. So where is the money going to come from? Well, you know, the projections do indicate that with a national VAT, and I'm not the one sitting here proposing it, but with a national VAT, the reality is that we stand in a position to raise legitimately a fair amount of money, just as the rest of the world has. VATs are very common in Canada and certainly throughout Europe, and probably are, and even though it's a regressive method of taxing, it does tend to be very effective and does raise a significant amount of money. Well, when we talk about going forward, the real key, if we were to sum it up in one way, there's a great deal of planning that needs to be done beginning now to provide flexibility for our clients for their future, for their current estate plans and for their future estate plans and business plans. If we haven't planned flexibly, quite frankly, our clients are going to get into a position where they're going to be surprises with their estates, whether they become disabled or they die. And this could be this could affect their businesses as well. Some of the issues, in fact, the larger issues, involve the complication of many estate plans, estate plans that have been drawn that really don't take adequate advantage of the changes that have come. And when I think about it, we haven't really talked yet about the changes to the estate tax, and we should cover a little bit of that. What I'd like to do is just run down what those changes are that are important for all of our listeners.
Okay, that would be perfect.
Good. We talked before about the exemption for federal estate tax purposes. It was sitting at the end of 2009 at $3.5 million. There was no estate tax, we thought, in 2010, and so there was really no exemption that was necessary. But now the estate tax has been brought back retroactively for 2010 for estates of individuals who actually died in 2010. I'm not going to focus too much on that. Those are special situations. We have several of those, but they're addressed by this tax act, and there are a lot of little details to it. But going forward, what we have now is a $5 million exemption for each individual. This is an increase from 2009 of $3.5 million. And for husband and wife, that means total exemptions of $10 million. And one feature of the federal estate tax that we were hoping for, that we actually got, was an actual sharing of any unused portion of the exemption. So, for example, if Tom, who's married to Mary, were to die in 2011 and had an estate of, let's say, $4.5 million, and he left it all to his wife would be able to actually use the unused exemption that Tom's estate was unable to use, of $5 million. And if it turned out that Mary was able, after Tom's death, to turn that $4.5 million into $10 million, it would be possible for Mary to pass that entire estate free of any federal estate tax to her kids at her death. Now, this comes with some strings attached. They aren't terribly, now that we're studying the actual act itself, the strings aren't too bad. But what this does is provide a great deal of flexibility for virtually 99% of the estates out there. Certainly on a national basis, it's only somewhere in the range of 1% of the estates of decedents that exceed actually even $5 million. So this is going to take care of, I think, for most people, most of their federal estate tax concerns. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't need to plan those estates. We have to remember that many of the business owners out there really have no feel for what the value of their business actually is, because the ownership interest doesn't trade in a market, in the marketplace, so we don't know what the shares are worth. Many people are very surprised to find when they start doing their planning that, in fact, their business may be illiquid, but it's still going to be taxed for federal and state estate tax purposes. So it's really quite important that that planning be done with a mind not only to the higher exemption, but the planning that's necessary in order to manage the assets that are left behind by our clients for the benefit of surviving spouse and children. Some of the other issues that we were dealing with as part of the estate tax, include a couple of other options that will likely make planning a little more flexible. One of the issues that our clients really need to address are the formulas in their plan. A typical formula in a plan that is used to, an estate plan that's used to reduce taxes, is to set aside assets in what's called a credit shelter trust, or what many people commonly term an AB trust. And the problem is that the formulas most people have provide that the credit shelter trust, or the family trust, or the B trust, is going to be funded with an amount equal to the estate tax exemption at the federal level. And if you were to look at, I would say, 85 to 90% of the plans that are currently out there that have not been revised, that's what they provide for. Well, what this would mean for those clients is that in reality, nothing would be left to a surviving spouse except through the family trust or the credit shelter trust. So most of our clients still believe that and still have as a goal to make sure that their family is taken care of, starting with their surviving husband or wife. So for that reason alone, this points to the need for an update of those plans to try and at least simplify them to a certain extent. And simplification and providing flexibility is really going to be the theme for this year in estate planning, making sure that the changes that have occurred today, as of today, with last year's Tax Act, will still be, that plans will still be reactive to those changes and be prepared for changes that are likely to occur in 2012 and beyond.
Excellent. And I think I love that you said simplification, and really, you know, it's kind of a, it seems to be a theme that we're all coming back to in so many elements of our life, is going back to the basics and taking care of that which is the foundation for our business, for our lives, and of course, when we're no longer here, taking care of our family the way we intended to do. And so obviously part of this is to make sure that we sit down with folks like yourself, Earl, and Jeff as we kick off our new year and really can now move forward with some of the planning that perhaps we've been holding off because we were waiting for these decisions. So, you know, it's interesting. There's so many moving parts, and believe it or not, we're down to the wire with our conversation, guys. So what I want to make sure that we do as we wrap up, we have about another 3 minutes here for just a couple of last little pieces of tips a little, you know, if I was a business owner sitting down across from you, what's one of the first things you'd say, this is where I'd really like you to get started as we kick off 2010, now knowing what we do? Earl, what would you like to share for a, kind of a last little tip or suggestion for our business audience today?
Let's discuss a succession and exit plan for the family, making sure that since most businesses do not have adequate liquidity and most estates don't have adequate liquidity for coverage of tax and other things that happen when people die, that liquidity and succession plan needs to be discussed. There are solutions. There are economical solutions. But the whole issue, much like real estate, is location, location, location. The issue with businesses is plan, plan, plan.
Yes, yes. And we have such a passion for what we do that a lot of times that's the part that gets missed. And, Jeff, what about you? What as you're sitting down with your business clients here in the new year and thinking about their needs, what's a suggestion kind of to, in parallel to what Earl is saying?
Well, I would kind of echo what Earl said, but I just maybe rephrase it a little different way. You know, almost every business, every, you know, real estate investor, you know, large estates, everybody's going to be affected by these law changes. And my suggestion is to anybody out there listening, you know, call, make an appointment with your attorney, make an appointment with your tax advisor so that, you know, from our perspective, so that we can go over what's in place or what's not in place and make recommendations as to what should be changed based on the changes in the law. It's, you know, an estate plan is no different than a business plan. It has to be updated every once in a while based on what on things like this. And not only your own, not only legal changes, but your own financial situation, your own business situation. So make those appointments. It's good to have at least one appointment, you know, once a year with your tax advisor and your business and estate planning attorney, just to make sure that you've got all the I's dotted and T's crossed.
And I think, you know, that's a great way to remind our audience that that's really been a big, I guess, mission and reason why we do the show, The Advisors, is to remind our business owners that your advisors are not an island, and even though they have their areas of expertise and they bring their piece to the table, those cross conversations and those meetings, and sometimes, I know, Jeff, we've talked about this, sometimes actually meeting with the other advisors, with the business owner, everybody in the room together, depending on the situation, can be just as important as well. But at least knowing all those moving parts is so key to the planning process. So,
absolutely.
I think it's great that you guys were kind enough to share and break down some of this. I know it gets complicated for our people out there listening, but you mentioned, Jeff, this affects everybody. So first and foremost, make sure we contact you. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us how we can contact either Earl here or yourself over at Mansfield Tannick & Cohen?
Well, our, you know, our firm information is listed on your website at nextstagebusinessradio.com. You can find us the firm on the web at mansfieldtannick.com. And then the general number here is 612-339-4295. And people can reach either myself or Earl or any of other of our attorneys at that number.
And, of course, your bios and about the firm is on mansfieldtannick.com as well. I highly encourage you guys to check them out. Earl, thank you so much for breaking down the 2010 tax into 2011 package. We really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, Pamela. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jeff, as always, we appreciate your legal advisory and appreciate you being a part of the team. And we look forward to continued conversations as we move into 2011 with you as well.
Well, it's always enjoyable, and I look forward to more of them.
Excellent. And thank you so much, listening audience, for being a part of our show today. Hopefully this has helped you break down some of the 2010 tax package into 2011, some of the changes and some of the not so many changes that will affect you as you move your business and business planning into 2011. Stay tuned for more on The Advisors as we kick off our 2011 and more planning shows and business information and resources. As always, we are here to help you take your business to the next level, to what we call the next stage, and we appreciate having you along for the ride. So have a great day, and as always, I like to say, that you have a great week.
This has been a presentation of the Next Stage Business Radio Network.